There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question, kiss my...
You know, I'm really going to miss Governor Ivey talking about the high-stepping turkeys once Thanksgiving's over. Maybe we take a little impromptu vote if we should carry over that into the regular Midday Mobile show intro. Maybe that one sticks around. We'll see. We'll talk about that. Also, speaking of talking, I want to talk to my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins as we head off into Thanksgiving and Black Friday. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going today?
Going good. So, yeah, what's the story at the shop? You're there now. What about Friday? You close tomorrow? What's the deal?
Okay, close for Thanksgiving and open up Friday. Normal business hours. We are not one of those shops that opens at some ungodly hour for people to go out there and get their Black Friday deals. And part of the reason for that is our deals are so good on a regular basis, we can't offer some of those crazy discounts you see out there. So after you battle the crowds and freak out a couple times... and you want to calm down and wind down a little bit, we're going to be open at 9 o'clock. We're going to have some coffee and some donuts. Just come in, relax, unwind, ask some questions, check out all the cool gift ideas, everything from the Open Alives to the old silver dollars to the engravable silver pieces. And on the jewelry side, Anna is going to be running some sales and some promotions. So there's going to be a lot of cool stuff to see on Black Friday.
Okay, so y'all, we've... over the years been telling you about Mobile Bay Coins. Of course, you listen to Angelo and Ron and the gang there with Two Guys and Some Change. But if you haven't been in there, they are the solution to this serious problem where people go, I've got people on my list. I've got no idea what to get them. I have no idea. They don't need anything. You know, I can't get them. They don't want anything. They don't need anything. Y'all, you go in and sit down with the folks at Mobile Bay Coins, and they find you something. And they find you something pretty darn cool. So, I mean, hats off to you.
Well, something cool and something unique, and those are two things that are very impressive. And then the final best part of all is we're going to save you money. If you had a budget of $100 and you think you're going to get one cool thing, we might be able to get you three or four, maybe even five cool things and still stay within your budget.
That is for sure. All right, give us directions. If we can't get out there today, we definitely need to see you on Friday. Tell us how to find you.
Yeah, we're in Midtown on Government Street. That's 2204 Government. You can always go to our website at mobilebaycoins.com or like and follow us on Facebook.
Hey, thanks, Angelo.
Have a good Thanksgiving, Sean.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving to y'all as well. And yeah, what a great idea to go by there for gifts. I have bought many gifts over the years from Ron and Angelo, so go by and check it out. And those Open L9s, y'all... buy more than you think you need. Seriously, it's just a little. This is a hack. This is a gift giving hack. Go, you know, if you're like going in and saying, yeah, I need one of those Open L9s, go get seven or eight. Because I've done this in the past, and then you keep them. Yeah, you like a desk at the house or wherever. You got a drawer there. You keep those things in. Then they're ready to go. They are a great gift item when you get called to a party or something you forgot or whatever. People love a good knife, a utility knife, or a knife for I got gardening sets over the years, kitchen sets, the pocket knife version. They're really great, and they're well received. All right. So, speaking of Christmas coming up, before we got some more things to get into this hour, but. Did you see the Amazon? As we talked about Amazon last hour, we're talking about the market, of course, and talking about companies with valuations that are dependent on what's happening from Friday on through Christmas. Of course, that is the retail sector. That's Amazon. But I have a feeling Amazon's going to be the cause. Amazon and telecommuting will be the cause of reduced traffic going forward. It won't be the automatic auto-driving vehicles. It will be the fact that people will be able to work from home and the fact that Amazon knows that that we're lazy and we'll pay a little bit more to have stuff delivered to our house. It shows now, if this is successful, then I've given up. We have hit peak non-laziness, I guess. Peak productivity, and everything goes down after this. Amazon officially began selling this week full-size Christmas trees. Yes, you go online, pick your Christmas tree. You can either get, they're between 6 and 7 feet. So 6 or 7 foot real trees. Yeah, these aren't, you're like, oh yeah, they sell this all the time. No, 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 no. I'm not talking about artificial trees. I'm talking about the real deal. The sap, the needles falling off, the great smell. Those Christmas trees, you go on, you order them, and bingo bango, they're at your house. So CNET website, tech website, reporting this, Amazon announced it would start shipping its first real Christmas trees as of this week, including Fraser firs, balsam firs, and Black Hill spruces, for people in a rush to get their trees up as early as, like, this week, I guess. Trees are delivered within 3 to 7 business days of the order. Customers with free Prime shipping and Amazon couriers deliver them in a box wrapped in twine. Ah, to give it that authentic feel of having somebody cut a tree somewhere around the country and ship it to your home. It's almost like grandma used to do. Amazon told folks at ABC News the trees are supplied by local growers in North Carolina and Michigan, or Michigan to a lot of folks. But many tree farm owners say Amazon can't deliver the traditional experience of going out with one's family to pick out a tree and bring it home together. And let me jump on their side for a second. Now, Amazon, do what you want, private company. I mean, I'll see how they do in the market. Although, I think they will be eventually the reason for reduced traffic, because Amazon's going to make it so you never have to leave your house. But there is something to it. If you're up, like the people in the Northeast, you know, where you get to go, and there's places here too, that go cut their own Christmas tree. That's kind of cool, family thing. But here on the Gulf Coast, more common is we go to the Christmas tree lot, right? And we see our friends' children are working at the Christmas tree lot, or our friends working like a charity Christmas tree lot, which I love all those things, when groups get together to sell Christmas trees and help out charities here locally, or schools, or, you know, a specific sports team with the school. But you go out there and you pick out, the family goes out, and you know, the kids like this one, mama likes this one, you like this one. You go back and forth, and you make the selection of the tree that's going to go home with the family. Yeah, I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. I think there's something very good in that. Those are kind of, I remember this, even at my advanced age, I remember that from being a child myself. And I, you know, I hope to impart those kind of memories, or I hope I have been over time, imparting those memories to my children. Probably won't be the same as, the truck pulled up out front. I got a couple boxes here. One of them's probably the paper towels. One of them's some video game. One of them's got to be our Christmas tree, right? And there it is. Yeah, because it's got twine on it. But yeah, so there's the thing. So it's a new, we'll see how they do. Hey, it is, can we save, is Christmas going to be, okay, how about that? Is, you know, people are out there saying that Amazon is ruining the holidays. They can only ruin the holidays if you let them ruin it. First of all, don't, I mean, what a victim mentality. Only if you let them ruin it. But I will ask, does it reduce the Christmas experience for you if you have the tree just show up at your house versus going out and collecting it yourself? By the way, the Christmas trees are fresh cut and also range from, they said, the Charlie Brown style trees, love that, to about 7 feet in height. So there you go. Cost $20 to $110, depending on the type and size chosen by the customer. So, live tree to the door now. Amazon is controlling even Christmas. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Wonder if I can come to y'all's houses before our Thanksgiving. Maybe afterwards, just got to sit there and go, I'm not hungry, Or go, oh, let me take my plate in the other room. Dan says, let's see, Thanksgiving, Christmas, down the bayou. I love this West Indies salad, marinated crab claws, and crab meat dressing. You are singing my song. This one from my friend, she says, now, I don't think I've had this, but I think I would like this because I like horseradish. I like to sometimes have some prime rib with my horseradish. She said horseradish salad is a must for our Thanksgiving. Some love it, some hate it. The stronger the horseradish, the better. You can sign me up for that. I do dig horseradish. Oh, and speaking of Thanksgiving and getting ready for Thanksgiving, so the Manis Boys, our friends over at Cottage Hill Package, have an event coming up tonight. Their pre-Thanksgiving limited edition tasting to kick off the Thanksgiving festivities. Nathan from Jim Beam is going to be there with samples of their limited edition repeal batch bourbon. That sounds pretty tasty. I'd like to have, can I have that for Thanksgiving? That's happening tonight starting at 6 o'clock. The bourbon was created in honor of the 85th anniversary of Repeal Day, so come out and taste that tonight at Cottage Hill Package. More details on their website, cottagehillpackage.com, or you can check them out on Facebook. Just friend them or like their page at facebook.com/cottagehillpackage, or better yet, go out and grab a sample of that great bourbon tonight. While you're there, too, a huge selection of craft beers, some great wines, spirits. You're a cigar fan, want a cigar after that great turkey dinner, or like I'm going to go, maybe that seafood dinner. They have the humidor is something that's big enough that it's good to have Billy the Tobacconist there take you around, because it's so broad you may get overwhelmed unless Billy goes, and then you can say, hey, if you're a cigar fan or you're like me, you're buying cigars for people, he can point you in the right direction. He's an expert. I mean, he's a tobacconist. It's in his job. So go out and check him out. Corner of Cottage Hill and Hillcrest, whether you go out for the bourbon tasting tonight or run through and grab some goodies for Thanksgiving or the upcoming Christmas holidays, check him out. Cottage Hill Package, cottagehillpackage.com. All right. That's good, too. This texter said, just picked up some shrimp, oysters, crabs, scallops, and gumbo from Billy's Seafood. Oyster Rockefeller, Oyster Florentine is on the menu. I love that. That is good stuff. All right, so y'all are singing my song, so and maybe I can try, I can keep trying to try to get part of our Thanksgiving dinner, if not the entirety of the Thanksgiving dinner, to be seafood. That would be good stuff. Some stories here I want to hit. By the way, coming up in just about 10 minutes, Dalt Norway is going to roll out 6.5 stories, right? Something we normally do. We do that on Fridays, but kind of a goofy schedule this week, so we're gonna do it a little bit early, like today. 6.5 stories coming up in a little bit. All right, I mentioned there's one of those. I think we see something akin to this every Thanksgiving, some version of the story. Washington Post put it up this year. 4 myths about the pilgrims, okay? So these are, as we, listen, people say, oh, they're ruining our traditions. Well, sometimes people are just in the business of ruining traditions, and sometimes we're trying to find out the rest of the story, right? That doesn't mean the tradition isn't still great. If we could further educate ourselves, what's wrong with that? So they say there's no proof that the pilgrims actually landed at Plymouth Rock. Missed that on the test. Also, the first Thanksgiving wasn't really the first, since Native Americans had similar celebrations around the harvest. And I'm going to argue with that. The pilgrims, well, here you go. Here's what they said in the story. I took these 4 things out of the Washington Post story. Number one, that they landed at Plymouth Rock. They actually landed in Cape Cod first. Okay, so you want to be accurate. You want to pull a Cliff Clavin at the Thanksgiving table. Yeah, they actually landed at Cape Cod first. Then they went to Plymouth. No one ever claimed they set foot on Plymouth Rock anyway until 121 years after they arrived. None of the original pilgrims ever wrote about it. So that's something that maybe we've created out of the cloth of legend since. Number two, that they came here to the New World in search of religious freedom. Okay, that is true, even though there's a nuance to it that the Washington Post story is trying to get to. They did come here for religious freedom, but they pointed out that they went to Holland first. Okay, the Washington Post, and I really, unless the Washington Post people went to school a different place, I think we all learned that, right? You learned that the pilgrims were looking for that religious liberty, and it wasn't so much that they were adventurers, were looking for the new world, they were looking for a place to worship God like they wanted to. So they went to Holland, and they, like Holland's always been, you can find freedom, do what you want. Holland, pretty laissez-faire, but they couldn't find any work. So in this story, though, this cracked me up. It said, yes, they left Holland to come to the New World to find jobs and make a living. Like, there was nobody here. Like, saying that there's got to be work there where there's nobody. Now, they made a living, and they made a life for themselves. But the idea that they can't find a job in Holland, let's go to a place that's completely unsettled. There'll be some jobs waiting for us there. There'll be a factory going up or something. Okay, number three on their list, the Pilgrim Thanksgiving was the first American Thanksgiving. Now, here comes the spin machine. And there's truth on all sides here, but Native Americans had similar celebrations all the time, mostly involving their crops and harvest. They didn't call it Thanksgiving Day, but neither did the Pilgrims. The first known use of that term was in 1674, 53 years after the first Pilgrim Thanksgiving. Okay, so semantically, maybe they didn't call it that right away, but to say they were already doing it here when the Pilgrims got here, yeah, the Washington Post says in the story they were doing it all the time. Hey, you know what? European people were doing it all the time, too. You were thankful for a harvest because that year maybe you got enough food to survive the stinking winter. But as an event, as an American event, Thanksgiving, I think was a thing that came, at least pointing at it, drawing a circle around it and saying this is a thing. How's the Pilgrims doing that? So, I mean, in deference, and I am a definitely deferential to the people that we butted in on here in the New World, and that is Native Americans, but it was probably not branded that same way. So Washington Post, I think that one's a stretch. I think it's a stretch. And this one, though, I thought was interesting, because if we were going to do, like we all did, y'all did it in, like, whatever it was, second grade, third grade, when you studied the Pilgrims, you do a crayon drawing. Okay, how about this? If you're going to do a crayon drawing of the Pilgrims, right, and you're going to draw some Pilgrims, you're going to color it in or draw some Pilgrims, what colors do you need to do that for their clothing? Right, you're going to say black, right? Because everything we've been taught. Now, this is interesting. Some studies now and descriptions and actually early writings out of Plymouth Colony says that the Pilgrims wore red, blue, green, yellow, orange, and black clothes. So I got to go back and get the 147-pack of Crayolas and redo my Pilgrim drawings there. But that's an interesting tidbit. It also mentions beer, which I'm surprised I didn't think. I thought there was teetotalers, that there was beer present in the early colony, and they would cook out, like they say barbecues. I think they mean barbecues like northern folks mean barbecue. If you ever, you know that, right? When people up north will say barbecue, and you know, we're all thinking, are they using a molasses-based sauce or a vinegar-based sauce? But they mean cooking on the grill. They mean grilling. But so there you go. Some things maybe you did not know, or some kind of spin machine around about Thanksgiving and the first Thanksgiving. All right, grab a few of these texts coming in now. And like I said, 6.5 stories with Dalton coming up in just a second. Oh, yeah. I saw the this just broke a little bit ago here, as there's now a big move. Pelosi is galvanized her support as Speaker. I guess this morning she was trending at like 2-1 margin in a new poll, because if you haven't followed this, not all Democrats are on board with having Nancy Pelosi regain the gavel. Remember the big gavel? No. They didn't want a Republican in there. And I think this is interesting and healthy. There were different factions within the Democrats that said Pelosi may not be the person for this. But she's probably had all those people sent to re-education camps, and now it looks like support has fully galvanized behind Nancy Pelosi back at the speakership, which I think is good. Which I think is good for the Republicans. Now I'll say this: if you look at the stats, she is a fundraising machine for Democrats. Nancy Pelosi, and that's why. Listen, she brings the money in, so she's always going to be, as long as she continues to do that, she's going to have a lot of support. But as a figurehead, the Democrats are trying to be, I would say, right, the compare and contrast their younger. Look at the people that they're bandying about to run on the Democrat side in 2020. Right, they're younger, they're minority, right? Except for Joe Biden, and Joe Biden leading the polling. Joe Biden, which I think Joe Biden, out of anybody I've heard, might be the biggest danger. And you laugh it off, but Joe Biden, seriously, that guy's an astute politician. He's a doofus sometimes, but he is an astute politician and can talk to about anybody. He's trending higher. But you look at Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, that's kind of the vibe with the Democrats. But they're going to put Nancy Pelosi in. She's older. We'll say it that way. She's older. They're going to put her in as Speaker. But yeah, so there was some pushback here, but it looks like whatever deals had to be cut, whatever had to be done, it looks like the support is now fully lining up behind Pelosi being the Speaker. But I think it, so what I'm getting at is, it will be probably better than it could be for the Republicans, because if you're doing a compare and contrast, and also she says, remember the whole Twitter conversation, she's, I have people that do the tweets. I think that was a quote from her. Having Nancy Pelosi speaking for the Democrats is a good thing for Republicans. It's probably a good thing for Democrat fundraising, but politically probably a good thing for the Republicans. So there you go. Nancy Pelosi probably back in as the speaker. When we return, we'll talk about stories I missed this week. I don't know how many of them will be based in Florida. Dalton, I've seen several just in my light troll through the internet. There's some Florida stories that probably really need to make 6.5 stories. So we'll find out, because we'll do 6.5 stories with Dalton Orwig next, right here on Midday Mobile. Check in with the news and Dr. Bill's forecast, and then we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 136 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Thanksgiving Eve. Glad to have you here. And by the way, just a side note here before we get into the main event, to the top of the card here. I do want to point out, I'm putting a video up on my Twitter feed, a link there to YouTube. Dalton has gotten to watch this. This is one of the, like I said, there's like 56 different Frying Turkeys Gone Wrong videos on YouTube. They have, okay, I've been obsessed with them today. They're pretty quality. This is like a mega mix of a few of them.
Yeah.
Would you say it's worth clicking on that on my Twitter feed?
Yeah, that was an awesome supercut you just showed me of some bad turkeys, throwing turkeys in the fryer, and it doesn't work out the way they plan. I could watch an hour of that, I think.
It is. Different settings, different folks making bad choices frying turkeys. You can check that link out on Twitter at FMTalk1065. But what you're here for is this. It's 6.5. Five stories with Dalton Orwig. I said, have they left early? Oh.
No Thanksgiving break for those guys.
That's right.
They're the real MVP of Midday Mobile,
yeah, well, I guess.
The band,
yeah,
when they do show up.
They are here.
I heard you asking before the break. Unfortunately, no Florida man stories.
How is it possible?
Week.
The other stuff must be so darn good, because I got Florida man stored stolen gear in a car with dead alligators.
Yeah.
I know, and
you were saving that for me.
Yeah.
I know, I should have let you know before the show. That's
right.
Poor planning.
I'll save that one. That's timeless.
We do have a couple Canadian stories. Canada, yeah, I know you were going to go there, Terrence and Philip.
Yes.
And we are going to go to Canada, and that's actually where we start off 6.5 stories this week. 2014 Olympic gold medalist and his three teammates were preparing for a curling tournament in Canada over the weekend, which it had to be in Canada because they don't have curling tournaments in North America. Oh, I'm sure they do somewhere.
On a team.
It has to be secret because Americans refuse to believe that curling is a real sport. But up in Canada, they still celebrate it along with their Labatt Blue and all that good stuff. Wade Thurber, he is the facility manager of the Pidhernie Curling Center. Yes, they spelled center incorrectly with the E at the end.
E fancy, yeah.
Yeah, not supposed to do that. That's in Alberta. He told CBC, that's the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, that 2014 gold medal winner Ryan Fry, who was on the Canadian gold medal winning curling team back in 2014, another guy, team captain Jamie Coe, and team members DJ Kidby and Chris Shilley were all ejected from the Red Deer Curling Classic.
Yeah.
Because they were swearing and generally exhibiting unacceptable behavior that nobody wants to watch or hear or listen to, because they were, quote, extremely drunk.
It's curling. It's a wintertime sport played on ice, right? I mean, what else are you going to do?
I thought it was a prerequisite before the curling tournament that you come in lit. Thurber said there was some damage in the locker room and other teams complaining about their stuff being kicked around in the locker room. I would venture to guess it was probably swept around, not kicked around, since that's what they do.
And do you think as you're getting ready to knock somebody's stuff, that person's scrubbing, scrubbing in front of you to get
They wax the floors beforehand. So he said, so at the end of the day, it was like, okay, that's enough of this gong show, which is totally Canadian to say that. The World Curling Tour did confirm the news on Twitter that the team had had been ejected for what they called unsportsmanlike behavior. The 40-year-old Fry, who was the one on the former gold-winning Canadian team, he issued a statement to the CBC where he apologized, as Canadians do. He apologized to those in attendance at the event and the tournament organizers. He said, "My actions were truly disrespectful and embarrassing. The committee was right to disqualify us from play. I will be taking proper steps to ensure this problem can never happen again, and I will strive to become a better version of myself while contributing positively to the sport and curling community that I love so much."
How is he going
to
do that? Are they going to ban? They going to like ban beer near curling, or what?
Or maybe maybe the proper steps for him would be, you know, keep up the drinking routine, but just less destruction next time before the event.
Be a friendlier drunk.
Be a friendlier curling drunk. I don't know if you can be friendlier in Canada. I don't think that's such a thing. They can be meaner.
He was tearing people's stuff up. Man.
He was. So, but he has apologized, and he was kicked out of that one curling tournament.
Duly noted.
And speaking of Canada, the hottest Canadian ever, Shania Twain.
Yeah, you're pretty.
She continues to endear herself, Sean, to the common man and woman. Mm-hmm. She was on a show which I've never seen. I know you record it weekly. Watch What Happens Live with Andy Cohen. That's on the Bravo channel.
Oh, yeah.
Interviews
every day I watch
stars it. Like Shania Twain. She's 53 years old now, by the way.
And she is gorgeous.
And she was on the show with Patricia Arquette.
Yeah.
They were both being interviewed by Cohen. They were playing a game called That Does Impress Me Much.
Okay.
Get it?
Yes.
Her song that doesn't that don't impress me much.
Right. So this is the flip around on
right.
this, right?
And I guess in this game, the late night host has to guess which fact pertains to each celebrity. He did correctly match this one event on Shania Twain. And her description of what happened, she said, "I'm on stage all the time. I have peed myself on stage." The show must go on. She doesn't take bathroom breaks, apparently, when she's on the stage. And she went on to detail a specific instance when she did urinate on the stage. She said, "I was very clever in this one moment. I stood up from my chair to get up and sing. I peed myself. And the puddle, I just knocked my glass of water over."
This is not happening. You're not reading this story to me. This is not...
I am. And just like Billy Madison, Adam Sandler and Billy Madison, where he said only cool kids pee their pants when he was trying to make the one kid feel better for using the restroom, she knocked the water over under her so that she'd have the excuse there. She went on, "I was wearing a skirt, thank goodness, during this event." She said, "I was dry and the glass of water was on the seat." And then she said, "I think when you're dyslexic, you think ahead of these things," which... I don't get dyslexic and thinking ahead. It sounds more like she just has a tiny hummingbird bladder, and she was planning for this beforehand.
Where is this show? What has happened to the show?
But listen to this. She went on. That wasn't the only embarrassing thing that's happened to Shania Twain. She said, "I was in Rome with my husband," and she was detailing something here where she locked herself out of her hotel room when she had to go to the bathroom. I think a lot of people have actually done this.
There's a theme, okay.
Yes, the bathroom is involved often with Shania Twain. She said, "I was in Rome with my husband, and the room was this big," and she, you know, made the room big with her hands. She said, "I went to bed naked that night, and I had to go pee, so I opened the wrong door, and I ended up in the hallway. I'm knocking on the door, 'Let me in, let me in.' My husband was like, 'What are you doing out there?' I said, 'Well, I was sure the bathroom was here.'" So that's just a little snapshot into Shania Twain, what's been going on.
Snapshot. Okay.
What's been going on in her life, and you can only get that on Watch What Happens Live with Andy Cohen. That's probably the only thing that I would find interesting from that show.
To not hear anything about Shania Twain for a long time, and then... all of a sudden, it's that whole gambit that you just ran through Shania Twain. I'm having trouble dealing with that. All right.
I think she's trying to distance herself from Celine Dion, you know, the other Canadian superstar.
Because Celine Dion wears undergarments? She wears...
Well, depends. I don't think Celine Dion probably takes bathroom breaks in her Vegas show if she needs to go to the bathroom.
You sure she doesn't wear some kind of adult, you know, diaper thing?
I'm not sure at all about that.
You know, you know who's a big fan of Celine Dion?
Who's that?
Former Governor Bentley.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
All right, here's a terrifying story from Chicago. Visitors in, they actually call this by its address. I didn't know that, but it's the Hancock Center in Chicago, and I guess residents there call it 875 North Michigan Avenue. That's what I've gathered from reading this story. But whatever, the skyscraper there, an elevator in the skyscraper dropped 84 floors over the weekend. 84 floors after a malfunction. It was a mechanical problem.
84 floors to the ground?
No, they stopped at the 11th floor. There were six passengers in the elevator, and they were 1,000 feet above sea level, or Chicago level, as it were, there, and dropped all the way to the 11th floor. Rescuers spent almost 3 hours rescuing these people after they dropped. Firefighters had to hammer through a concrete wall to get the stranded visitors. One person who was on the elevator, Mexican tourist Jamie Montemayor, said, "At the beginning, I believed we were going to die. We were going down, and then I felt that we were falling down, and then I heard a noise, clack, 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 clack." That's what this passenger is saying. A broken hoist rope is reportedly to blame for the plummet. A series of backup ropes did bring the elevator to a stop, which prevented serious injuries. But even, I mean, going as far down as they did, what was it? It was 84 floors.
Okay, and a floor, generally, we're talking about 10 feet, mm-hmm. right?
That's right. So this was 840 feet. They almost dropped 1,000 feet total. And people were actually still using elevators in that building afterwards. Passengers had to use the freight elevators to get to the top of the skyscraper. I guess work waits for no one, but they did have properly functioning elevators too traveling, but 84 floors in this skyscraper, which they call
Lord
875 North Michigan Avenue, built as the John Hancock Center in 1969. It's 1,500 feet tall, 44 feet taller than the Empire State Building, which of course made its debut in New York back in 1931, and not quite as tall as the Burj Khalifa there in Dubai, which is 2,700 feet.
They would have time to get up. Sorry, terminal velocity. So 860 feet. Terminal velocity there could, with all that way, I mean, it could be 200-300 miles per hour, and then all of a sudden you catch and stop.
Mm-hmm.
Did it ever get squished to the floor?
Well, they said there weren't any serious injuries, so that must mean that the backup ropes somehow slowed them down before it completely stopped.
Did
I don't think it
jerked
down
like
to a stop.
Was like a bait casted reel where they feathered it as they were casting it? And to me, it seems like that would be a lot like a backlash, and all of a sudden it just go boom when it caught on that.
And, you know, it's one thing when you're in an amusement park ride like the Tower of Terror and you hear the clack, 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 clack. But when you're at the top of one of the world's tallest skyscrapers and that happens, and then you do drop. No, shout out to the Dewdrop.
Yeah, what's up, Dewdrop?
But when you do finally drop from there, that's some scary stuff, man.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Yeah, you just gave people nightmare material. All right, 147 FM Talk 106.5, coming back with more 6.5 stories with Dalton Orwig. I said 6.5. Okay. Fine, guys. 6.5 stories with Dalton Orwig, and maybe some more Shania Twain stories. I guess it changes a little bit here in that story, the beginning of this song, and when she says,
"Let's go, girls."
I never thought it when she said, "Let's go, girls."
So
which,
that's what they're doing.
There you go. Coming right back. It's Midday Mobile.
Going out tonight, I'm feeling all right.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 150 FM Talk 106.5. Let's get back to it. It's 6.5 stories with Dalton Orwig.
So we've made it through three stories on story number four here. And, you mm-hmm. know, when I watch nature documentaries, I've always wondered whether the crew ever feels the need to intervene when they're watching some of these things that happen.
Like, the lion's about to get the gazelle, don't let it happen.
Maybe not in those instances where nature is taking care of nature.
Right.
But when it's something they can help out with, well, let me get to the story. I'll explain. And
right.
Now I do know now that the general rule is to not intervene ever, but there's always at least that one instance, right?
Uh-huh.
So a BBC documentary crew was in Antarctica, and they abandoned their no interference rule to save a group of baby penguins.
Well, I mean, if you're gonna go soft for a group, baby penguins, I can't blame them.
Yeah, they're pretty cute.
Cute things.
It is unusual for the film crew. They're on the crew of Sir David Attenborough's show Dynasties.
Which he has the best documentary voice ever. But
he really does, and I'd like to hear him intervene or talk about this story. But they usually do not interfere with nature. That's kind of one of the rules of going out and doing this kind of thing. And several emperor penguins on this last Sunday's episode, several emperor penguins and their chicks actually got trapped inside of an icy ravine and cut off from their colony. That's when the crew decided to build a stepped ramp for the stranded penguins to climb to safety. They saw some of the chicks in the colony die from the extreme weather as the temperatures reached a low of minus 76 degrees Fahrenheit. The show's director, his name is Will Lawson, he said, "We opted to intervene passively. Once we dug that little ramp, which took very little time, we left it to the birds, and we were elated when they decided to use it." Attenborough, though, in the past has actually drawn criticism for not interfering in nature. He said he would have also broken the unwritten rule in this specific instance. He said it's very rare for the film crew to intervene, but they realized that they might be able to save at least some of these birds simply by digging a few steps into the ice. One time before, back in 2013, Attenborough defended a BBC documentary's decision to film the death of a baby elephant in Africa, and at that time Attenborough said that it was very important for the film crew not to interfere. The executive producer of that show, Mike Gunton, he told the BBC, that particular creature, talking about the elephant here who died, was dying of starvation, and it was far too dangerous to intervene. If you tried to go there, the mother probably would have attacked you.
Yeah, they'll stomp you.
And even if you fed it, it would have survived for maybe another hour, but because there was no food anywhere, ultimately, and he said this is David's point, ultimately you're just prolonging the misery and you let nature take its course.
Yeah.
But I guess when it comes to the baby penguins, they're just too cute not to help.
Right, right. But I mean, I got to defend where Attenborough is coming from on this. I mean, the problem is we got a bunch of candy backsided people here that have spent no time in nature and go, well, we got to, you can't fix everything. There's all kind of things like that. Nature getting its nature on every day out there. Mm-hmm. So.
But when it's something as simple as just making a couple steps so that the little penguins climb their way back up, I think that's a little bit different there.
I still think it's wrong.
Oh,
but,
okay.
But I could be swayed into it because penguins are cool.
They are. We could have a bigger discussion on that sometime. But now we go to Oregon, where we're talking about drunk inmates.
Nice.
Yeah, this story is about two Deschutes County, Oregon inmates, and they were on a work crew. Christopher G. Turi, he's 30 years old. Sean D. McAllister, 34. They were part of a four-inmate work crew at a ranch east of Bend, Oregon. Their job was to feed rescue animals and clean up the property. But at some point during their workday, Turi and McAllister drank hand sanitizer from a container in the jail van, and then they had some real fun. They took off on a sheriff's office four-wheeler and broke through a ranch entrance gate on their way off the land. It's not clear from the sheriff's office how much hand sani that Turi and McAllister drank. And
explain to people. I mean, they're drinking this, right, because the hand sanitizer has some amount of alcohol in it.
Yeah, hand sanitizer alcohol amount ranges from 45% to 95%. So 90 to 190 proof there for you.
Wow.
And most of the hand sanitizing products have more than 60% ethyl alcohol, which that's the alcohol you'll find in your beer, brandy, whiskey, things like that. The deputy that was in charge of supervising the inmates noticed that McAllister and Turi were missing. He saw the gate had been forced open, and then someone later called 911, reported seeing the duo speeding in the area on the ATV and riding in circles. So if they did attempt an escape, but it must have come later after the donuts. Authorities used an Oregon State Police plane to help find McAllister, Turi, and the ATV. You wouldn't believe it. It was described as green with sheriff written on it.
I'll be darned.
Turi was found on National Forest land, and then McAllister was found about 35 minutes later. He'd abandoned the ATV at that point.
Taken
and ran
it on
away.
Foot since then.
And he was trying to hide in a field, they say.
But he'd be easy to find because you go, oh, I smell hand sanitizer. There he is.
Yeah, or I guess you could just light a lighter or a match and maybe he'd light up. But you wouldn't believe it. Turi was sentenced in September to 100 days in jail for driving under the influence.
Go figure.
Yeah, now he's right back at it.
Big surprise.
Speaking of drinking, so we just had a drinking on land story. Now a story about being drunk in the air, and be careful when you fly in Japan.
Uh-oh.
Japan Airlines has now moved to update the rules on drinking alcohol because it's been reported that Japan Airlines pilots have failed breathalyzer tests 19 times since August of 2017. 19 times.
Ow.
Japanese newspaper Mainichi Shimbun cited on Thursday unnamed airline officials in a report that said failed tests actually resulted in delays to 12 domestic flights. Passengers were told the delays were due to crew health conditions, but the staff made no mention of alcohol levels. They did introduce these new breathalyzers in August of 2017, which apparently actually work and tell you when they've been drinking.
Yeah, they've had a little sake before the trip.
That's right. The latest report follows news that a Japan Airlines pilot admitted being almost 10 times over the legal alcohol limit when he was at London Heathrow Airport back in October.
10 times?
That's right. 8 of the 25 domestic Japanese airplanes airlines do not impose alcohol tests on pilots who are about to fly, but it sounds like they probably should start doing so.
Holy cow.
There's a lot of drunk Japanese pilots out there.
All right. Duly noted.
Yeah. I do know a lot of people are traveling through airports this week because AAA told me. I would have known any other
right,
way.
Without AAA telling
so 6.5 story this week. Pretty fitting. So okay. It's when I give you half the story and you give me the rest of it. Mm-hmm. We always wrap up 6.5 stories on this one. Not this specific story, but on the 6.5 story. And I love these European news agencies. They say a holidaymaker is suing British Airways.
What is a holidaymaker?
A guy going on holiday.
Oh, okay.
Making his own holiday.
Okay.
He's suing British Airways for £10,000. Must have been something crazy, right? Stephen Prosser, 51 years old, claims that he suffered personal injury and loss of earnings when he took this flight from Bangkok to Heathrow. So for 6.5 stories, what happened to Prosser that caused him to sue British Airways?
I mean, the easy answer would be either he drank a bunch of sake. Mm-hmm. Or Shania Twain urinated on him. But those would be the easy ones.
Both of those happened, very possible.
What happened to him? He fastened his seatbelt, and it was so tight, it caused him major injuries to the groin area.
No? He was forced to squeeze into a seat next to an obese man. A very obese man, apparently, said that he was 6'4", 308 pounds. Now, our guy Prosser here, only 5'3" tall, said that the guy he was forced to sit beside was that large that he had to force his buttocks between the armrests of the seats. He said it caused him personal injury and loss of earnings because he asked if he could move, and they said no. He had to sit next to this fat man in the airline all the way to London from Bangkok.
Man, I wonder if there's going to be a class action suit. I went in on that. I've been the guy in the other seat. Before be like, dude, man, stay over on your side. All right, it is 6.5 stories with Dalton Norwig. Y'all have a happy, happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you soon.